This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab on our website at progressive.org. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me stand-up comic Rabbi Bob Alper, whose sketches run on XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, and he's been doing this Laugh in Peace comedy tour for many years now. Rabbi Bob Alper, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you. It's nice to be here, Matt.
A rabbi who's...
Call me Bob, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not that old. Well, I am that old, but call me... Anyway.
Bob Alper. Rabbi who's a stand-up comic. That's not something I meet every day. Tell me, first of all, how'd you become a rabbi?
You know, it was just a regular career choice. I didn't put my hand on a rock and suddenly decide. It was a career choice when I was in high school. I was very active in synagogue life, and my parents were. And then in college, I wanted to work with people in some way. And they sort of came together, and so it was a very normal good career choice, and I had 14 years serving congregations in Buffalo and Philadelphia and really loved doing it. But after 14 years, I decided to try other ventures.
And did you always want to try your hand at being a stand-up comic?
Yeah, it was always funny. And in high school, I used to memorize Shelley Berman and Bob Newhart routines and do them for Jewish youth groups. And that was the highlight of my life. I just adored it. And I found out that the girls paid a lot of attention to me, and I got elected to offices and the organizations. I never, ever thought that I could be a stand-up comic. That just wasn't in the cards. I mean, back then there were a few comics out there, but it wasn't the boom like we have now, and it never occurred to me. But then things happened.
Well, how did they happen? I mean, did you just decided, okay, I'm not going to be a rabbi anymore, I'm just going to get on stage?
No, what happened is I'd earned a doctorate, and I was 41 years old. I'd spent 14 years in the fishbowl of congregational life and decided, because I had a very supportive, non-materialistic wife, that I would leave the congregation. I opened an office with a psychiatrist. We shared space. I was going to do counseling, life cycle events, weddings, funerals, started a small congregation. This is in Philadelphia. And just enjoy the parts of the rabbinate that I really liked most and not have to do the board meetings and the fundraising and the things that I didn't like. That summer, the Philadelphia Jewish Exponent, the weekly Jewish paper, put a little tiny ad in this. Do you think you're funny? If so, let us know in 50 words or less and apply for the Jewish Comic of the Year contest. Well, I sent in my 48 words, and I said, P.S., I'm really a rabbi, but I was able to say this in under 48 words. And I was one of 100 entries, 50 semifinalists, 13 finalists, and we had to do 5 minutes, which is a long time, on stage in a comedy club in front of a large audience. And I came in third behind a chiropractor and a lawyer. But I don't think they're doing stand-up.
And then you started to tour.
It happened. I mean, the one of the judges really liked me. She thought I should have won, and she was the host of AM Philadelphia, the biggest morning TV show. So she had me on the show. She was able to arrange for me to do a regular set at a comedy club, and I was terrible. But anyway, and that started it. And bit by bit, I started doing organizations and free shows, and it built and built to the point where by 1990 I was doing it full time.
Speaking with Rabbi Bob Alper, who is a stand-up comic who's been doing touring lately on a comedy tour called Laugh in Peace, and we'll be getting to that shortly. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. This is Progressive Radio you're listening to. Who came up with the idea to pair you with an Arab or a Muslim? How'd that come about?
Well, it was a publicist from Los Angeles. In the end of 2001, I hired a publicist. And very honestly, she was not very effective. The job of a publicist is to raise a performer's visibility. She basically got me into the Witness Protection Program. She's not good. But she had one idea. She said, Bob, why don't you do a show with a Muslim comedian? And I said, do you have any other ideas? Because I wasn't interested. And it wasn't the Jewish-Muslim idea. It was just working with another comic, because comics tend to be neurotic, hard to get along with. But she found a guy named Ahmed Ahmed, and he was living in Hollywood, and I was in Vermont. We had moved to Vermont by that time. And we sent videotapes across the country and liked what we saw. And so in April of 2002, I basically invited him to come east. He performed with me at a synagogue. He was sweating bullets. And it worked. I mean, after the show was over, the women of the synagogue were surrounded him trying to fix him up with their daughters. It was a love fest because he's a great guy. He's a wonderful man. And so Ahmed and I started doing shows together. We did about 150, 160 shows together, a lot of colleges. Then he transitioned into movies. He made a movie called Just Like Us, which is fabulous. It's on DVD now, about a comedy tour to the countries like Saudi Arabia. He's been in other movies. He had to be in L.A. for auditions. So I Googled Muslim comedian, and a guy named Azhar Usman popped up from Skokie, Illinois. And Azhar and I have done, again, we're getting up to about 150 shows.
Skokie, Illinois is a very Jewish community.
Right,
too.
Yeah. Well, he's a big guy. He's of Indian background, a huge beard. He's on my website, bobalper.com. If somebody goes to www.bobalper.com, there's a you'll see him on there in some other video.
And that's Alper, A-L-P-E-R.
Right, A-L-P-E-R.
No people, T at the end.
People think we're Alpert, but yeah. we dropped the T at a party in Boston. So it became Alper. But Azhar's a big guy, and he walks out, especially in synagogue shows, looks at the audience and says, "I bet this is the first time you've ever seen someone who looks like me smile before." And then he goes on to say, "Hey, I'm more Jewish than you are. I got the beard going, I keep strictly kosher, and I went to law school."
I mean, that's what it sounds like. The act is a lot about disarming prejudices. And the timing of this original tour, I want to return to for a second here, because end of 2001, 2002, this is after 9/11, there's a lot of fear and hysteria. And then there's so didn't you think at that time that was going to be a hard sell?
We thought it might be initially, until we did the very, very first show and we saw the sense of relief that people had. Oh, look, here's an Arab Muslim who looks like a terrorist, and I'll talk about that in a second. And he's nice, he's warm, he's funny, he's affable, he's sweet. And that describes Ahmed. Mm-hmm. When I say he looks like a terrorist, there's a movie called Executive Decision about Arabs hijacking an airplane. And Ahmed played terrorist number four. Not one, two, or three. He was terrorist number four. So, I mean, he's a big guy, Egyptian background. And he's funny and he's warm. And it disabuses people of some of the stereotypes that they've held. And it's very, very healthy and helpful in building relationships between people. And it goes the other way, too. I've done shows at mosques. I'll tell you about that later if you'd like.
Sure. Well, you can tell me about it now.
Well, you know, because of my involvement with Muslim comics, I was actually invited to perform at Muslim Fest 2009 in Toronto, which is pretty interesting. First of all, I got to the airport in Toronto and had to go through immigration because on business. And the officer said, "What brings you to our city?" I said, "Well, I'm a rabbi from rural Vermont. I'm going to be doing stand-up comedy at Muslim Fest 2009. He picked up the phone. He said, "Yeah, this is Station 3. I'm going to need a supervisor down here." So I got on stage, and they had a few Muslim comics who kind of warmed up the audience. And on this big open stage, and there are 2,000 Muslims in front of me. And I looked out. I said, "I feel so strange here, totally alone, absolutely out of place." I said, "Think of it. All of you are Canadians, and I'm American." And it was great. That was a very receptive audience.
You got to break the ice somehow. I mean, right. You know, I was thinking back about the Laugh and Peace tour, the Jew and the Muslim Arab tour that you've had going here since 2001. And I remembered, though my memory's bad, that Jackie Mason had done this refusal to go on stage with a Palestinian comic, Ray Hanania, in 2002, when I was, you know, you were doing your thing at that time. How'd you react to that?
Well, you know, it got them a lot of great publicity. That's not what we're about. And we're totally non-political, so that never enters into our equation.
But you must have thought that was rude.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very negative element. I was envious of the publicity they got. I mean, mm-hmm. performers envy others' publicity. But it was negative stuff, and we really try the other side. We try and do positive stuff. And you know, I work with Muslim and Arab comedians. And by the way, there's a difference. Ahmed explains to his audience the difference between Arabs and Muslims. As he says, most Arabs are Muslims. Most Muslims are not Arab. The difference is when an Arab hears a joke, he'll say, ha, ha, ha. And when a Muslim hears a joke, he'll say, that's not funny. So let me tell you the backstory to that joke. And Ahmed does it well. His 10-year-old niece told him that. She said, Uncle Ahmed, listen to this. And she told Ahmed, he was performing in front of 2,000 Arabs and Muslim. He does the joke. It kills. He got off the stage and handed his niece a $10 bill.
I'm speaking with Rabbi Bob Alper. He is one of the comedians in the Laugh and Peace comedy tour. His sketches run on XM and Sirius Satellite Radio. You can contact him at bobalper.com. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at The Progressive Magazine. Let me just probe a little bit this assertion of yours that what you do isn't political. I mean, I understand that, you know, you may not make pronouncements on how to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And if you knew how to resolve it and could resolve it with a wave of your hand, why, you'd get the Nobel Peace Prize. But what you do is political, though, in a way. I mean, here we are in the United States more than 10 years after 9/11, and the bigotry, actually, against Muslims and Arabs in the United States is higher than or at similar levels to those that persisted right after 9/11. And it seems to me that what you're doing is an effort to bridge that and to have people overcome their stereotypes.
Yeah.
And that's political, isn't it?
It is. I guess the subtext of what we do is political. And it's building bridges, it's trying to break stereotypes just by bringing people together. Because how many times, for example, do leaders of the Muslim Student Association interact with rabbis? Never. Yet I still correspond with the president of the Muslim Student Association at Auburn University, where he performed, I think, 8 or 9 years ago, and we're Facebook buddies, and we email each other every once in a while. She's a wonderful young woman. So we build these bridges, and before we do our shows, amazing things happen. We were doing a show at Georgia Tech, and we're in the back room with the president of Hillel, a young woman, and the president of the Muslim Student Association, a young man, and Azhar and I could tell there's good chemistry between the two of them. We're talking about they were going to hang out after the show. They wanted to know if we'd like to come with them, and et cetera, et cetera. And they told us that before they began working on Laugh and Peace, even though their offices were next door to one another in the student union, they'd never spoken to each other.
Really?
And now they're friends because they worked on this show together. And we were recently at the University of Florida, and the pro-Palestinian kids and the pro Israel kids, the Zionist organization on campus, and the Hillel and the Muslim, they're all in this together, and they're all having a great time together. I mean, there it was kind of weird. They wore ties and jackets, and the girls wore high heels. I don't know what was going on, but it was cute, and it was warm, and it was friendly, and they were all very excited about laughing together in a non-political, non-charged atmosphere and understanding each other in a much different way.
You told me that when you were in Florida, you were doing a show, and someone from the community where they had that guy was burning the holy books of Islam there, the Quran. Someone came and talked about that in an antagonistic kind of way. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, the kids pointed out that there was a woman there who was a member of the church of that minister, the idiot who threatened to burn the Quran. First of all, I really wanted to kind of meet her and thank her.
Because
at the time that he was making that threat, there was a meeting going on at University of Alabama as to whether they should bring Laugh and Peace to campus. They had raised half the money, but couldn't get any more money. The dean of students was there, and the dean of students actually said, you know, this is terrible what's going on in Gainesville. We have to do something to show that we're different. The university will pay the other half. And we had a great show at the University of Alabama thanks to this Koran-threatening, burning minister. At University of Florida, the woman, we have a Q&A at the end, and the woman asked some kind of I didn't even really hear her very well. It's kind of a negative, very negative about Muslim question. I forget what she said, but I remember Azhar's answer. He looked at her and said, "No." Next question, please.
And that was that.
Yeah, and everyone laughed. You know, it was a perfect subtle put down. And in the course of Laugh and Peace, we do Q&A, but we've never had, maybe one time in 100 shows, a political question. And if somebody asks a political question, they say, you know, what do the two of you think about the separation barrier in Israel or something like that? We always say, you know what, we're comedians. We make people laugh. We bring people together. So we don't address political issues. We simply refuse to. Mm-hmm. And there was one time, actually, I was with Ahmed in Boise, Idaho, at a synagogue performing, and a woman was walking around with some kind of petition during the reception afterwards. I forget what it was all about. And as we were driving back to the hotel, we compared notes, and it turns out that unbeknownst to one another, both Ahmed and I said to her at different times, "Gosh, we really wish you weren't here."
On the other hand, you know, maybe they were pushing some way to resolve, or they thought to resolve the crises.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's maybe fine for another venue, but we have an agenda, and that's to help people laugh together, relax, and get to know each other in a different context.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, what is the importance then of laughter, either on a personal level or, I think, on some macro political level, not on resolving X issue, but what is the function of laughter?
We put it very succinctly. When people laugh together, it's really hard to hate one another. When you share a laugh, you're sharing your humanity. You're sharing a reaction that you can't fake. You know, laughter is a very genuine reaction, and you obviously know the person next to you is laughing. Both of you think something's funny, and that's something that brings people together, and it works very nicely.
Isn't it odd how and kind of frightening how fast things can dissolve, though? I mean, you're a rabbi. You know the history of the Holocaust. And then I was thinking more recently, not of the Arab-Israeli conflict, but of what was going on in the former Yugoslavia, where there were people who were neighbors and friends who would obviously laugh together for a long time, and then boom, you know, they're killing each other. What does that tell you?
It's very depressing. You know, it's hugely depressing. And I mean, you know, the same thing in the Holocaust, reading stories about classmates. And I mean, Gerda Klein, who's a very close friend of ours, a Holocaust survivor, says all she went through, one of the most difficult and painful elements of the entire experience that she was a slave laborer for years, was when one of her best friends in school stopped having eye contact with her as a kid and stopped talking to her. These things happen, and I don't know the answer. If we knew the answer, we'd be. But we try and do the best we can to heal and shed light on each other's humanity.
I mean, I remember my predecessor at the Progressive, Erwin Knoll, who was born a Jew in Vienna, and actually he and his dad just barely escaped in 1939. But in 38 or 37, his mom asked him to go buy an orange from the local, orange peddler, fruit peddler, and he went there, and the person said, "We don't sell oranges to Jews," and that stuck in his mind. He wrote a really powerful essay about it. But is that? It's just the same kind of story that you were just relating, Rabbi Bob Alper. Rabbi Bob Alper is. Are you still practicing as a rabbi?
You know, I do high holiday services. I've organized in Philadelphia every year. I love doing that. We have a lot of people come, and funerals once in a while. I had the most interesting funeral a few weeks ago. It was at Arlington National Cemetery, a three-star admiral. I officiated the service in the chapel. They had a six-horse caisson, the Navy band, a 15-gun salute, and a four-jet flyover. And we did the funeral, and then we went back to the officers' club where I did stand-up.
And how'd you get called on to do that funeral?
It turned the children of this man didn't realize this. In his papers, he had asked to have me do what I did. What I told them was I had officiated at the funerals of both of his parents in Philadelphia during the 80s. He was a lovely man, obviously not as full of himself as many other top echelon soldiers and sailors might be. He used to have a rubber chicken in his office, and if somebody got too full of themselves, he'd throw it at them. He was the Surgeon General of the Navy.
Wow.
And it was a real privilege. And here's a man who didn't take himself – he took his work seriously, didn't take himself so seriously. And the family loved it.
How was your show at the Officers Club? Did they like it?
Wasn't the best venue. It wasn't quite a comedy club. But I would do a few, like 4 or 5 minutes of jokes, and then people would speak in between. And everyone had the same kind of wonderful, funny, warm things to say about this man.
What an unusual funeral
to
preside over and participate in. And do you do weddings?
Only if people want to fly me to Sedona. That was the last wedding I did.
Oh, it's beautiful there.
Yes, yeah. But I don't do it. I'm full-time comedian.
I'm speaking with Rabbi Bob Alper. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. This is Progressive Radio. I just want to return to this question of the function of laughter and also coming out of the Holocaust and these disasters that have befallen humanity in the last 100 years and prior to that, Lord knows. Walter Benjamin famously said that after the Holocaust there can be no more poetry. It's not a statement that I agree with, but I understand where, everything is just so horrific. How can you enjoy art? And yet the poets keep writing poetry.
Yeah.
And there's poetry and there's laughter even after. And why do you think that's important?
Well, just keep us alive. I mean, after 9/11, they said that's the end of irony, then comedians the week after said, we've got to do it. And then, of course, every comedian in the world said, unless I get up here at Club Yuck Yucks and make you laugh, the terrorists have won. Well, I mean, that's funny in itself because it's such a, kind of a dumb, self-serving premise. But after 9/11, 2 weeks after 9/11, I had to fly from the East Coast to Vancouver to do a show. And I was on an American Airlines flight across the country. It was very eerie and very strange. And I got to Vancouver and they kept the show. I did the show and people really needed to laugh. I didn't talk about the issues that were going on. It was just diversion.
Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to 9/11? Where were you? And how did you instantly react?
Everyone remembers the moment. And there's a photographer who was name is George Kalinske. He's the photographer for Madison Square Garden, and he did a book called Rabbis. And I was one of the 90 or so rabbis whose portraits he did. And he lives in our town. He has a vacation home in our town in Vermont. I was on the phone with him, and he said, "Wait a minute." He was in Manhattan. He said, "Wait a minute. June says there's something going on, and she can see something." And that was when it happened.
Wow, that's intense.
That's where I was.
And did you have a sense at that moment or that day about what this all meant?
I think it's too overwhelming even to think, but it was cataclysmic.
I mean, it's hard to figure out when you were, I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. I was coaching my kids' soccer team. We had a game that was scheduled for that afternoon.
Yeah.
And then, I and a couple of the other parents were just wondering, what do we do here? Do we cancel the soccer game? And maybe it would have been different had we been closer. But, we had the soccer game. I thought it was the right – I still think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
It was a very strange day, obviously. Yeah. A strange day for the kids to kind of integrate, too.
Yeah.
I remember ultimately we turned the TV off. How many times do you want your kids watching those planes go into those buildings?
Yeah.
But it was hard to get beyond. But, as a comic, I mean, your first show, you said, was 2 weeks after – and then did you touch that event or you? How'd you handle that?
I think I began the show by saying, this is an awkward and terrible and painful time, and laughter is, in my view, laughter is not simply diversion. I think there's a holiness to laughter. I think there's a reason for laughter, and it helps. It's a coping mechanism, and so after that introduction. It was almost like an excuse, if you will, to say we're going to have the show, and it's okay to laugh. It's not disrespectful. It's using our coping mechanisms to deal with something that's really terrible, and it doesn't diminish the sadness and the hurt and the pain that we're feeling.
Rabbi Bob Alper is on this Laugh and Peace comedy tour. You know, I'm struck by the phrase, a holiness in laughter, because of your former profession. Is there something in the Bible, in the Old Testament, that talks about laughter and holiness?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's the use of laughter as a coping mechanism is illustrated particularly in the story of Abraham and Sarah, when in their old age, Sarah was told she would have a son. And she said, am I to enjoy my husband at age 90? I mean, that's, you know, that's pre-Viagra. And then Abraham, when he found out he was going to have a son, said he fell to the floor guffawing. And I was teaching that at a synagogue in Hartford, Connecticut, or someplace. I was doing a weekend scholar-in-residence weekend where I do some teaching and preaching, and then I do stand-up. And to illustrate falling on the floor, I got down on the floor. It was very loose. It was an afternoon. And I started pounding the floor, going, ah, ha, ha. And about 6 months later, I ran into the rabbi. And he said, by the way, Bob, I should have emailed you to let you know, one of the ladies there thought you were imitating Abraham and Sarah having sex. I said, well, no, that's not what I was doing. But they actually named their son, Abraham and Sarah named their son Yitzchak, which means laughter, or he will laugh. And it's all about laughter as a coping mechanism for confronting a very strange situation, which is parenthood at the age of 90 and 100.
Jews and humor go together and have gone together for a long, long time. Why that tie, do you think?
You know, there are a number of different reasons. Some say it's because it's a response to danger. I think that's absolutely true. It's a very good coping mechanism. Others say any kind of intellectual activity is something the Jews prize because we're like portable professions. You know, if you get kicked out of the country, you can't take your farm and you can't take your factory, but you can take your brains with you. So we're really into portable professions given our history. I think there's a third reason, and that is Jews love language. And humor is using language. If a comedian can tell a joke in 11 seconds instead of 12 seconds, that makes – I mean, when I'll do an hour and a half show, and if at one point I say, you know, I don't need to use that syllable. At the end of the night, wow, that was great. I got rid of one syllable, half a second. But it's a creative use of language. And the best comedians, you'll hear Seinfeld, Lewis Black, they'll get laughs every 5, 6, 7 seconds if – or, you know, and those who go on long time, they're not as good. It's not using the language as well.
Well, we don't have 18 seconds or 8 seconds. We have about 30 seconds left, though. Do you want to tell one joke in 30 seconds?
Yeah, this is one of my favorites. A Frenchman, a German, and a Jew are trudging through the desert. The Frenchman says, I'm so tired, I'm so thirsty, I must have wine. The German says, I'm so tired, I'm so thirsty, I must have beer. The Jewish guy says, I'm so tired, I'm so thirsty, I must have diabetes.
So that's Rabbi Bob Alpert. He's been touring for years now on something called the Laugh in Peace Tour, where he tours with an Arab or Muslim or Palestinian, and there's another person here who's a Christian now on stage with you. Yep. You can find out more about him and the Laugh in Peace comedy tour at Bob Alpert. There's no T at the end. Alpert, ALPER.com. Bob Alpert, thanks so much for being my guest today.
My pleasure. Thanks, man.
It's been a lot of fun.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.